Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, fellow entrepreneurs. My name is Josh here in Orlando, Florida, and I'm speaking with an entrepreneur through and through. This guy helped build his own businesses. He's helped other people build his businesses, and he's helped others build an entrepreneurial ecosystem here in Orlando, Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to Ron Benzeev. Ron, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So with all of how I introduced you, why don't you kind of start unpacking, you know, let's start unpeeling these layers of the onion to let people know who is Ron and what is he up to?
Thank God for terabytes of data capabilities, right? How far do we want to go? So once upon a time, way back when, I was born in Israel, grew up in Africa and Asia and Europe, and came to the States actually in the early 80s to go to school. Never in my wildest dreams would I ever think that not only would America would become home, but Orlando would actually become home. But yet, you know, 30 plus years later, here I am in Central Florida, calling it home, loving it, and having a blast along the way. That's the first layer of the onion.
Well, let's keep on peeling. Let's hear more about your life and your journey.
So English is my third language, which means that I'm keenly interested and aware of what's going on beyond my borders. Growing up in an international environment, being exposed and fortunate to being exposed to a lot of different things throughout the world, thanks to my parents' travels and journey, it gave me a perspective that at the time I didn't realize would be so informative and so formative, but yet, you know, here we are. People don't realize often, we forget, you know, that we really are one world, one community. As I saw one time on a bumper sticker, said, you know, this is planet A. We don't have planet B, right? Plan A, plan B. We don't have it. This is the only one we have. So everything we do has to have an impact, positive or negative, in and on our environment. And so trying to figure out the right way to do this is what has driven me, and especially in the last 8-9 years of my life and my career, through the ups and the downs and the positiveness and the failures that one goes through in life, and the ability to and being lucky enough to be able to turn around and have perspective and learning. Right? You're going to screw up. You're going to make mistakes. The key is not to make the same mistake twice. Hopefully, right? So that's really the benefit, is learning, growing. And then from time to time, I'm fortunate enough to have people reach out and say, hey, would you mind if we chatted for a bit? Or, hey, can you help me with this? And, you know, when that happens, it's a mitzvah in my religion. It's a blessing to be able to sit with someone and share and, you know, have someone that listens. So that's great.
Well, I think you have a lot of people listening in who are excited about learning about you, about your business, and about how you know, maybe your journey as you came over to the U.S., because you went from Israel to a few different places, then landed in the U.S. So why don't we start there? Like, talk to us about, like, your upbringing. You were born in Israel. You kind of moved to a few different countries. And then here, talk to us a little bit about that so we can know who you are.
So when you say to someone you grew up in Africa, in the U.S. primarily, they think immediately South Africa. And in my case, it wasn't. I grew up in West Africa, in the Ivory Coast. And life there was extremely privileged. That was part because of where we were and what my father and my parents did. I was in a very privileged environment, but yet there were people around me, and I was not that I was really keenly aware at the time. I'm a kid. But with perspective, I find out that things that were happening then still happen today. And I'm 56, soon to be 57. But when I was a 5 or 6 or 7 year old, in Africa, there were kids congregating around a street lamp to be able to do their homework. I didn't have that problem. I lived in a fancy place and blah, 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 but there were people in the streets. Guess what? It still happens today. 50 years later, it's the same issue. It's, you know, why is it called the dark continent? It's not because people there are black primarily. It's because there's a lack of infrastructure, a lack of resource, lack of lighting. Recently, I was at a conference and someone talked about the concept of the dark continent. And he talked about that. He said, he said, the best example I can give you is if you've ever flown over the ocean and seen absolutely nothing, that's virtually the same in Africa. When you fly over the dark continent, it is like flying over the ocean at night. There is nothing. Or just look at satellite images and you see few pockets of light and most of the continent is black, darked out. And those are the challenges. So the impact, and again, it's all drip, drip, and you start connecting the dots with 2020 hindsight and looking back into what you do. What I do now, which was started as a social enterprise, as a do good, do well. You can't do any good in life if you don't do well. So I'm a big proponent of the people, planet, profit approach, the three P's of social entrepreneurship. But, you know, to me, there is a ripple effect. And if you don't realize that you have a ripple effect into everything you do, then you cannot make the right decisions down range. It's not just about you. Yes, it is. But at the same time, it's you and the others. So how do you go about your life in the long run to do that?
So you you came from a place that, you know, they called the dark planet, and you started to see things as a young person growing up, being exposed to issues of humanity and the living conditions that people were living in. And it helped form kind of what you're doing now. So why don't you let us know what business you are, you know, involved in now that you started and that you're building?
So, you know, I don't want people to think back then I had no clue really, right? It's an indirect effect. You look, you listen, you watch, but it's everything that grows and grooms you and directs you and informs not only your nature, but that's your nurture. It's the duality of what you do. And in that process, so I'll continue that, you know, pull a little bit, you know, further on that string. From there, move to the border between France and Switzerland. So the languages that I speak were Hebrew at home, French in my schooling system. English became my first foreign language that I had to study in school, then came my second foreign language. And then, you know, because of the travels and blah, blah, blah. So I understand I have a basic comprehension of a few more, but I'm fluent in four languages. And then from there, moved to the US, went to business school in Philadelphia, and traveling back and forth, I met this young lady in Orlando. And as they say, the rest is history. Three kids later, I've got a 23-year-old daughter who's currently volunteering, basically working as a fellow in Estonia in the Jewish community in Estonia. My son is graduating from Florida Atlantic. She graduated from Rollins. Son from Florida Atlantic soon. And my youngest daughter is at Florida State as a sophomore. But here I'm in Orlando. And I did a variety of different things before launching into this. And the story behind this was born from failure. I was in the real estate industry. I was a real estate developer. And when the market crashed, it crashed right on top of me. Everything just collapsed. I lost a lot of money, lost a lot of things along the way. And at first you kind of walk around and going, I'm a failure. And it takes a while to be able to peel that apart and say, ultimately, I'm not a failure, but I failed at something. And the fact that millions failed along with me really irrelevant. It doesn't matter because it happens to you and you go, oh shit, right? What happens now? And it was very fortunate that, you know, my spouse was extremely, I apologize for this. I thought I had turned it off and I didn't. So my spouse was extremely supportive of what I do and a recreation, a continuation of saying, okay, if you stop doing this, you don't want to do this, that's fine. Let's do other things and figure it out. And with her help, that is where and how I've started getting involved with and ultimately launching not only the company I'm running now, but also my involvement with the local ecosystem from Startup Weekends, which had already had one event here, but we ended up growing it, and I brought some additional Startup Weekend education, Startup Weekend social enterprise. So we brought a variety of different flavors to bolster this. I think at one point, Central Florida had by itself more Startup Weekends held here than some states had altogether. It was just incredible how the community embraced it. We had people traveling from all over the country to come to some of our events. Then subsequently, I helped with Shay, whom I think you're going to hear from sooner rather than later. Shay, we jokingly say she was the spark and I was the fire, but together we built 1 million cups. And because, in case people don't realize, I do have some gray hair, so I've got some connections in the community, and I've got a Rolodex. For those who don't know what that is, it's an old piece of paper with a lot of things, and you could flip through them. So that's what it means, an address book with a lot of people. And then progressively just connected the dots and got involved with UCF, Rollins, UF in some places, my alma mater back in Philadelphia, and work with the Startup Weekend, startup world in general. And so that is one piece of that puzzle. And then the second piece is the launch of World Housing Solution. I jokingly say it's called World Housing Solution, no S in the end. We only have one solution, but it's really good. That's the one piece behind it. The second piece is that worldhousingsolutions.com was taken, and the guy just wouldn't let me have it. So there we go. We're stuck with worldhousingsolution.com. And as the name implies, our goal, our aim, our intent was to create a better solution for people, primarily those refugees displaced by man-made or natural disasters. And I did exactly what I tell everybody else what not to do. I mean, I taught at Rollins College. I was the entrepreneur in residence at Rollins in the undergrad department. I would tell everyone, don't go build it. Find out if anybody else gives a shit about your idea. Then start developing it. Then go iterate. And then maybe go build it. No, Ron didn't do that. So we ran out and we built a shelter. We went, oh, this is the best thing ever. It's solid. It's insulated. It's hurricane resistant. It's wind resistant. We'll protect the women and the kids. It's above ground, whatever, everything you want. And all we got from it was crickets. Actually, worse than crickets. We got the attempt is good enough. And then we're like, wait, have you gone camping in Haiti in the summer? It's not that much fun, especially after 3 weeks or after 3 months or after 3 years or after 6 years. But that was the refrain. People really did not care, those with the money. So the separation between, so we're talking about educating and lessons learned. Sometimes when you go and do stuff, the user is not the buyer. And the best example I can give you that is, you know, you have a younger child, right? The user and the buyer dilemma comes during the holidays when all the advertisement is aimed at the user from the toy manufacturers, and the user will tell the buyer, aka the parents, that, hey, mom, dad, you got to buy me this, right? So but in this case, the user has influence on the buyer. In our case, no. So the displaced, the refugees, don't have an influence. They get what they get, and the people that are providing help are providing the help. And for them, a tent is good enough because it's not for them. It's they've only got so much money, and one thing led to another, and that's how the entire process operated. And what ended up happening is we literally were contemplating our demise. The company was going to shut down when I got an email from the U.S. Navy. And this is where we could say, and we'll be right back after this commercial. No?
No, let's keep going. Let's dive straight in. I think this is good.
So I got an email from, again, lessons learned, right? I all the emails that were addressed to my info at World Housing Solution came to me. Mind you, there weren't many of us. So, you know, email came to me, and it was from the U.S. Navy. Actually, from a branch of the U.S. Navy I'd never heard about called the Seabees, also known as a construction battalion. So a lot of people have heard of the Army Corps of Engineers, great guys. The Seabees, construction battalions. I think the technical term would be badasses, because they're the ones that are dropped ahead of everyone in the middle of nowhere, and they have to build an airfield for the Marines to land on, those kinds of things. So they reached out to me and they said, hey, we saw pictures of your little cutesy little shelter thing you're making, but can you make it bigger? And after making sure that I wasn't being punked and it was indeed the U.S. Navy, and we engaged in conversation, and about a month later, I finally managed to get on the phone with the gentleman. And during the conversation, he said, you know, you're not the only company I reached out to. And in my mind, I'm going, well, duh, you're the freaking U.S. Navy. I would imagine you did reach out to a bunch of other companies. And then there was a little pause in the conversation, and he says, but you're the only company that returned my email. So the thought in my mind immediately was, you mean I'm not the prettiest girl at the dance? I'm the only girl at the dance? I'm like, I don't care. W is a W. I'll take the win any way it happens. But it's a great lesson for me, which means that I can tell you that I don't care how big this company or the next one will be or whatever I do in the future, the info at World Housing Solution Box will always come to me. I will always have visibility into it, because I can tell you, not once, not 10 times, but probably 100 times I've sent emails to companies to their, hey, reach out, you've got questions, contact us. And I've gotten zero responses. Just blows my mind. Hey guys, live buyer right here. I've got money. I want to buy. I'm interested in your stuff. And I get no answers. So understand this. If you're launching your business, or you're in your business, or you're doing something right now, keep an eye on that, because it's a hot opportunity. Someone live for which you pay a lot of money to try to go and get your prospect. Your prospect is dangling right there at the end of the line. Just reel them in.
Yeah. So you started building this after the real estate market crash, which hurts a lot of people, including myself. You started building this thing, you and your wife, started building this business, and you're on the verge of shutting it down, to one day you get this email, ding, in your inbox. You took a look at it, and it was from the Navy. Like, what kept you going? First of all, what kept you going in that spot? Because for people listening, and for myself included, you know, who've had some business failures, keep on going when it's scary, when it's dark, when it's cloudy, you know, like that's tough. What kept you going in that time?
You know, I wish I had the magic wand or the secret recipe and say, well, if you buy this, you will know all about that. And it's different for everyone. In my case, again, my wife was supportive. She said, you believe in it. I think it's awesome. I think it's, and that's a crucial piece, right? You cannot do it alone. You cannot, if you're a partner, husband, wife, whatever it may be, boyfriend, girlfriend, is not in it, you're dead. Forget it. It's not going to happen. It takes a village. There's a book that was written by, Meg Hershberry, if I remember correctly. It's called For Better or Work. And it's her life as the spouse of an entrepreneur. I mean, think about it, for better or work. We work, we joked about this, right? Just before you started recording, I said, how many hours does an entrepreneur work? All of them. It's Saturday, here we are talking and sharing ideas and stories and experiences. But that's what drives me, that I enjoy this. This is fun. This is an opportunity to A, give some energy, and B, get some back. Because maybe someone is listening and someone is watching this, someone's going to go, oh, you know, moron, hate him, whatever. And someone may go, this is really cool. I like it. Let me reach out, or let me learn more, or say, hey, Ron, can you help me with this? And that's what we do. You know, one of the questions I ask people, especially successful people, is to say to them, who helped you out? How'd you get here? And if they go, well, you know, I've been working hard all my life, I'm like, bullshit. Along your journey, during your experience, during your adventure, people either push you out or pull you up. And if he can't turn around and point to those moments, then shame on you, because you cannot do it alone. And I can point out to every single one of my events. I can name the people. I can tell you where it happened. I can tell you where I was. And without them, I wouldn't be here today. My business wouldn't be in business. Yesterday, a gentleman visited in my office and introduced him to one of our new hires who started a few days ago as our director of manufacturing. And I said, Mark, please meet my friend Tony. And I said to Mark, without Tony, we would not be in business today. Tony believed in us and brought us business. He looked at this. He said, our troops need this, which is the next segue, right? We got more and more involved with the U.S. military. A few years ago, we finally landed a big enough contract that it was like I'm finally breathing a lot of oxygen and not sipping it through a straw, because my life was this, just, you know, bouncing along. Not flying out yet. Just waiting for the next event. And we finally had it. And Tony, this gentleman, was instrumental. Without him believing in what we do and putting his arm around me and saying, here's the crap that we deal with in the military. He's a former military. Tony, if you're listening to this, thank you. I love you, brother. So he mentored me. I'm older than the dude. I went to business school, whatever. You can always learn from everyone. If you're ever the smartest man in the room or woman, you're in the wrong room. Get out. Go find people that can teach you, because if you can't learn, you're done. And so without him, we wouldn't be where we are today. And he's helping us to grow still to this day. This was 4 years ago. And here we are, 4.5 years ago. And here we are, progressively, slowly, we're growing. We're in a great position. We're closing contracts. We're hiring some amazing people. I looked at my team the other day and just went, oh my God, this is growing up. This is a real company now. There's actually, you know, we're not just winging it and just saying, yes, we can, and then trying to figure it out. There's actually people who know, who can. And that's really, that's the fun part. It's scary. It's scary, but it's fun. And again, you can't do it alone. So in my case, my wife was behind the process the entire time. It was hard. Let me tell you, when you go from making a boatload of money, have a ton of cash in your bank account, to having to hand back properties to the bank because she can't make payments anymore, it's a scary time in your life. Especially when you're in your late 40s. It's a very scary, with three kids, one of which about to go to college, or bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs and everything. Scary time. But, you know, here we are.
That's it's also humbling too, going through that time where you go from abundance to lack of abundance, right? Lack of resources where you actually have to turn some in. That's humbling. How did you handle that? How'd you handle that personally?
Bourbon. I'm kidding. It's you have to talk. You have to stop internalizing and start externalizing it. It's the turning it from I'm a failure to I failed, right? So people foreclose, right? Or people turn their houses in, right? And you look at this and say, oh my God, what a failure am I? And then you look at this and you go, okay, if you have an underperforming asset on your balance sheet, what do? You cut it off and you move on. Right? Different way of looking at this. Oh my God, I took a house. I got to hand it back. What happened? No, it's an underperforming asset on my balance sheet. I'm a smart businessman sometimes. And I go, okay, you know how, if I could have thought about it in those terms at the very beginning, it would have been way ahead of the game. So going, oh my God, what will people think? I'm like, you know what? Quite frankly, I really don't give a shit about what people think anymore. It doesn't matter. It's about them, not about me. But then again, I've got a few gray hairs. You know, I always say I didn't react the same way when it first started. I sure as hell would never act the same way 20 years ago or 30 years ago. But it really is. I tried. I can't do it. It's not working out. Okay, cut this, move on, lighten the load, And when I made certain, when we made certain financial decisions together, it was like literally this kind of like, wait, there's a spring in my step. I feel so much lighter. This is what a relief. And that's the fun part behind it.
Yeah, that's really good, because a lot of times we look at failure and we're in this being an entrepreneur who's failed some businesses, you know, the whole time I'm, you know, like our heads are down, our baby is falling apart, and we're thinking about, you know, cutting it off the balance sheet. And, you know, we're thinking like, what will the world think? What will people think of that? But the problem is, or the thing is, most people don't give a shit. They're not like sitting there looking at you, or, you know, they're looking at their own problems, their own things. You know, it's not all about us, is it?
That's, you know what? No one knows what crap someone else is going through, right? There are no better liars in the world than entrepreneurs, period. How you doing? Oh my God, so close. Oh man, if I can only tell you, we're about to close this, we're about to buy that, oh my God, we're the contract, shut up, just stop, just breathe. No, cut the bullshit. It's me, just tell me. And I can tell that a couple of years ago, I sat with an entrepreneur in town, and we were at a coffee shop, and we were having a conversation, and I asked the same question, so how you doing? And the entrepreneur went, and I put my hand on their arm, and I went, stop. I mean it. How are you doing? And the person stopped and burst in tears. And I went, it's okay. I ask because I give a shit. If I don't care, am I gonna ask, right? But if I ask, tell me. And we spent an hour and a half, 2 hours just decompressing, just toss it my way, right? But it was just like this, like, dude, just tears. And it was okay. It's absolutely one of those where it's okay. It's hard when it's the other way around, right? So I love helping people. When people go, how can I help you? I'm like, I don't want to. But going back to those events when which are life-changing, I was with World Housing. I had an event where I was invited to go to Europe to a military trade show, and I was going to be the only company there. I didn't have the money to go. You have to make decisions. Here's my budget for this, my budget for this, my budget for this. And I didn't have the budget to go. And I met with a young entrepreneur here in town. And he's like, hey, let's grab a cup of coffee. And I said, sure. And we go grab a cup of coffee and we sit at the, and he's like, so how you doing? I'm like, wait, no, it's about you. No. He's like, today it's about you. How are you doing? I went, wait, I'm not used to this. This is, you're turning the script on me. He goes, you always help me. You always ask me, how are you doing? So we went to this conversation we had, and he said, so is there any problem? Are there any issues? So we talked about, hey, I'm invited to go to this event in Europe. You know, U.S. military base for this event. I would be the only manufacturer of structures that fit within this umbrella, but I can't go. And we talked a little bit about this and said, well, how much do you need to go? And I told him. Long story short, he and his brother wrote me a check. He wrote me a check to go. I would not be in business today, chapter two, if he, Adam, thank you, Adam, had not said, take the money and go. I came back with a small contract. That contract helped us to stay alive. Okay. Pushes you out or pulls you up. You can't do it alone. And if you just keep it in, no one can help you. If you share it when it's too late, it's too late.
Man, you mentioned so two people so far, well, your wife and two other people that have really helped you. One was a military friend. He said the Army or the military really needs that. What was that person's name?
Tony.
Tony and Adam, you gave a shout out to both of them saying thank you. I think from now on, every time I interview someone and put them on the show, I'm going to remember you in your example of thanking people. And I'm going to ask the entrepreneur, I think I'm going to put this in the show from now on. Who do you want to thank? You know, and because I think that a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we give until our cup is empty sometimes. But very few people have the attitude that you have of gratitude. And I like that. And I want that to be something that we do forward. So thank you for that, Mr. Ron.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a few things that I really want to learn from you and with you. And I want, you know, the audience here to be a part of it. You mentioned that there are three P's of social enterprise. You mentioned that a while ago in the show. Do you remember what they were?
People, planet, and profit. And when I went to business school, it was only profit. All you cared about was the profit. But you cannot have the profit if you don't take care of the planet and the people. So the people around you, within you, you know, part of your company, part of your customers, all that, it's truly absolutely crucial. So
a lot of people are talking about social enterprise now. It's kind of a buzzword and it's a cool thing, you know, like we're building this, but we're giving away dollars to do that, right? So everybody has this buzz because I believe that there's such a human desire to do something good and back. So I think that this is a good framework to look at it. People, planet, and profit. Would you consider World Housing Solution, the only solution, would you consider yourself a social enterprise?
Soon. And I say that in the following way. So again, we pivoted. And when you pivot in two ways. You pivot either at a 90 degrees, which means you can still see where you're coming from, but you're going a slightly different direction. Or you pivot at 180 and you came from back there and you don't look at it anymore, you don't care anymore, you just keep on moving. So we pivoted at a 90. And the reason we pivoted at a 90 is because we're still called World Housing Solution, not cool military shit I'd like to sell you, right? This is not who we are. So our approach, our desire is still to have a positive impact on what we do. It just turns out right now that we're able to do that with the U.S. military. So maybe I should explain a little bit what we do. We make buildings out of composites. So think IKEA meets construction. Our panels come in a container. You open the container. Everything can be carried by hand. You need very basic tools to assemble the whole thing. But when it's assembled, it's actually hurricane and earthquake resistant. It is extremely high. It has a very high insulation value. So think living in a Yeti cup sort of approach to life, which means that you need very little electricity to air condition or heat it, which means it's a great candidate for hybrid power, solar, batteries, wind. And we blend this holistically in also integrating water from air, water recycling. So we do a variety of things that are beyond the norm that people look at or it appears when it came particularly to the U.S. military, but also we're, again, from my standpoint is how many problems can I solve when I go and deploy my structure? So I'll give you an example. Why does it matter to the military and right, they've got money and they don't care and so on and so forth. And I consider myself, you know, a smart entrepreneur in tune with my customer and marketing, my finger on the pulse, and it's all bullshit because after 7 years of doing this a year ago, I found out that my story didn't resonate. People don't care about your solutions. They care about their problems, period. Doesn't matter how cool your solution is. If it doesn't solve anything, it doesn't matter, right? I may have the best cassette tape player cleaner in the world. It doesn't matter. No one has cassette tapes anymore, right? Doesn't matter how cool my stuff is. So find what the problem is and solve it. And then talk to the customer about how you solve that problem. Is it better, faster, cheaper, longer lasting, whatever it may be. And if you have all those together, then hopefully someone's going to wave a check and say, I want this. The reason it matters to the U.S. military, I discovered, is not because I'm selling this holistic, sustainable, off-the-grid, really cool thing. It's green. Let's hug it out. It's awesome. They don't care. They want to reduce their logistics problems. The U.S. military, every military operates on fuel, right? Back in the Roman Empire, they talked about an army marches on its stomach. Right? Napoleon lost the war because of this. Caesar lost the war. Hannibal lost the war because they couldn't have their logistics in place to support it. Fast forward, the Germans lost the war because of logistics. They couldn't get fuel fast enough. Fast forward, we did not go into Iraq without having all the fuel organization done beforehand so we could supply the tanks, supply the Humvees, supply this. Newsflash, in case anybody didn't know, we don't take Priuses to war, right? So it uses a lot of fuel. How much of an issue is it? Here's how big the issue is. 58% of all our casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan came from the logistics side.
Say that again.
58% of casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan came from the logistics side. People driving trucks. And as a Marine Corps colonel recently said to me, he goes, Ron, even a stupid bad guy, a dumb bad guy, an untrained bad guy will realize that the trucks are coming every day. There's only one road that can take a 15, 20, 30 ton truck. And all they got to do is wait there to blow it up or shoot at it. So the more trucks you can take off the road to supply our troops, the safer the troops are. Right? So what does that mean? That means that we recently sent latrines. For those of you that have never served, that means bathrooms. For the U.S. Air Force, those bathrooms are sitting right now in a sub-Saharan desert environment in Africa. That latrine is 3,200 square feet. So think about a giant IKEA box with a bunch of different boxes, and the guys built a 3,200 square foot bathroom. Men, women, laundry, the whole nine yards, 100 feet by 32 in the middle of the desert. That building is there to serve between 250 to 300 men and women, not at the same time, just making sure. And it uses 6 tons of air conditioning. So let me paint the picture for you in another way. It replaces tents that were being used with porta potties and other bathrooms and showers inside. Those tents use between 45 and 50 tons of air conditioning. So from 6 tons to 50 tons, that's the difference. Our system uses a lot less energy to air condition or heat, which means it reduces the logistics burden, which means now we're talking the language. Now the customer goes, okay, you're solving a problem I care about.
Well, it sounds like you're saving people's lives. You're making the planet a better place. And are you guys generating a profit?
We're generating a profit slowly. We're getting there. So we're in the process. We're reinvesting everything we get back into getting better and going after and hiring and growing and creating jobs here, right? Here, meaning in the U.S. in Central Florida, which is an awesome place to be in. That's our intent. And solving interesting things along the way. Recently, we're working right now on a very clever, what I think is a very clever solution to deliver medical help to folks in need in a very simple manner, but again, off the grid. Think of a clinic that will be operated very quickly just with solar and very, very small generators, but yet provide medical help anywhere in the world. We're really thrilled by that. It's going back to the stuff that are near and dear the humanitarian side, the do well so you can do good, and while at the same time having an impact on folks that are laying their lives on the line for us, our U.S. military. Just amazing folks.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really exciting what you're doing. What could we expect out of the future with all you're building, Ron? And, you know, for people who are following you, who are watching, you know, have seen the things that you've done here in Central Florida for the entrepreneurial ecosystem with a few great people, where can we expect to see you go? What's the future look like for you, Ron?
Well, depending, people are hearing, unfortunately, no more from me than they have in the past, simply because, there's only so many hours in the day, and and I have to. So if you get a yes from me, it may not feel like it, but consider it as a big deal because I'm getting more and more protective of the amount of hours that I have in the day. From our standpoint is we're on the threshold of some hopefully really big news and the ability to really explode our business, which again to us is just a fantastic place to be because it's a welcoming environment. People are in our case, Central Florida in particular, are really welcoming and helping, and people are reaching out. And once they realize what we do, if you're curious, just drop me a line and say, "Hey, Ron, you may be busy, but can I come by and see what you do or whatever it is? If we can't accommodate, we'd love to accommodate and show people and give you a tour of what we do. Unless you work for the competition, then no." To us, the future looks good. It's exciting. People always say, "What's your exit strategy?" I'm like, I laugh because, obviously Google had the same question and IBM had the same question. And it's like, right now I don't have an exit strategy. It's not true. I do. But right now I'm focused on what we're doing, how we're doing and improving the process, doing it better each time, learning from it, right? What we talked at the beginning, you're going to screw up. You're going to make mistakes. You just don't make the same ones. As long as they're different mistakes, it's okay. No one's perfect. Just improve the process, improve the story, improve what you do.
Yeah, there's a question that I hear often. It's what would you ask your younger self? But I'm going to change it up a little bit. Let's fast forward 20 years from now. And then that guy in the future, Ron, is coming back and giving you a piece of advice now. And me, right? He's sitting here. The future Ron is coming to talk with you and I. What advice do you think he would share with us?
You can have fun. And sometimes you forget to have fun along the process. Now, you and I chatted about that right at the beginning. Sometimes it's work, right? One of the questions I ask people all the time in interviews, and it never fails to surprise them, I say, "What do you hate to do?" Because they're always talking about all the stuff they're awesome at. So what do you hate to do? If I said to you, "You're going to do this for the next week," would you quit? What do you hate to do? And it's funny because typically most people go, "No one's ever asked me that." Okay, I've asked you that. What do you hate to do? So I'll ask you, what do you hate to do? When you wake up in the morning, go ahead.
Ron, I hate painting. I grew up on a construction site with my father, and he's a meticulous painter, and I can't paint in the lines. I hate painting. I never want to do it again in my life, I swear. I hate it.
So you can cross that off your list. It's like, if you ask me to paint, but now if you had to paint, would you?
What do you mean by have to?
Right. So to me, there's certain things that it's the work versus the fun part. So certain things for me are work and certain things for me, this is great. And thank you again for the opportunity to do this. I think in 20 years, it would be, continue to not take yourself too seriously. Hopefully people get this. It's what I wish is someone came back 10 years ago and said, "Loosen up. It's going to be okay. You'll get through this. Just cut the dead weight now. Don't hang on to it. Rip the Band-Aid," whatever other euphemism you want to use those in order to be able to get through that. One thing is certain, someone said to me, "What are you going to do when you retire?" I'm like, "What does that mean?" Yeah, it's, I'm cursed. I go through things and I look at stuff and I go, "That's really stupid. Why am I doing it that way? There's got to be," and then I slap myself. I'm like, "Stop, focus on world housing. Stop. You can't multitask. You can't do 20 things. I think I can, right?" Turns out only one person in the world can do that. It's Elon Musk. He's going to Mars. He's driving his car into space. He's going through whatever. God bless him. I don't know how he does it, but amazing. I got to focus and I've got to pick one horse. I'm going to ride that horse as long as I can. And I think from 20 years from now, that dude would go, "Good choice."
Awesome. So the advice of your future self to now, from Back to the Future, he would say, have fun. Don't take yourself so serious and focus on that one thing. So that's the future Ron's advice to us today.
We'll find out, right? Let's put this in a time capsule and my kids will come back and go, "Remember, Dad, you said..."
Yeah, very good. Very good. So you help As we kind of wrap up this show today in this interview, two questions. I'm going to end with a fun one, but the first one will be, how can people find you, find more about your company, and just learn from you as you learn and grow?
Reach out to me on LinkedIn. If you do, make it personal. Personalize it. Don't just blindly add me. Say, hey Ron, I saw you on the video. I saw your interview. Love to connect. Right? Do that all the time. Obviously, worldhousingsolution.com. Just one solution. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. I think we're on Instagram now. Someone just recently created our effort. There's not much posting, but find us on all the stuff. Would love to see on Facebook. We're pushing all that. Some great news are about to hit on Facebook first. So go look there. And again, I'm my info is all over the web. If you can't find me, you're really bad.
And for the guy who helped bring 1 million cups into Orlando, right? You help bring this in. At the end of every 1 million cups, and I've been to hundreds of them, we always ask, what could the community do for you? So Ron, what can the community do for you in honor of 1 million cups?
Thank you. Well, it's a great one. So the community can, again, from a social standpoint, help us amplify the message. We love working with our troops and we love working with the US military, but we also want to go back to our roots. So if you know people, if you're active in your church and in any kind of organization and you think it could benefit from a house in a box that can come and create a school, a community house, whatever it may be, reach out. If you want to learn more, we're going to do a special event. Ooh, you're getting the scoop on that one. A special event in May. It's going to be an event to help us raise money for a local charity that helps supports our troops, called Josh, Just Our Soldiers Helpers. We're going to have an event at our facility. So you get to get a tour, you get to have food, drink, and put together care packages that will still get sent to our soldiers. So stay tuned on Facebook. That's going to be there. And, you'll see me in the community. I'm around. If you do, just come and say, hey, Ron, we'd love to get involved, love to help. And if you know anyone very high up that can buy a bunch of my stuff, absolutely. Bourbon's on me.
And bourbon and business. Dave and I were talking about this, so we're going to do bourbon and business together.
Ooh, I like that. Bourbonandbusiness.com. Yeah. Check it out right now. Is it taken?
or startups and shots, something like that. You like it?
I like it.
Cool. Well, Ron, thanks for coming on the show, sharing your story, sharing your experience, being honest with us, and just having a good time talking and letting us be a part of what you're doing to help the troops and help people. Across the pond, across the seas. So thank you for doing that. Ladies and gentlemen in the audience, I'll put these in the show notes. I'll put some of the links for his social sites and for his website and his LinkedIn, so you can reach out with a personalized message to say, hey Ron, I heard you on Orlando Entrepreneurs and I want to reach out to say hi, thank you, and how can I help? Send you a lot of money. Does that sound pretty good, Ron?
Absolutely, or just grab a cup of coffee. Either way.
Sounds good. So guys, thank you for listening into today's show. Hope you've enjoyed, hope you've learned, hope you've been inspired. Just remember the three T's of social enterprises: people, planet, and profit. I think that's a great thing for all of us business owners to think about and to think through. So Ron, thanks for the advice. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful day. We will talk to you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You could also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.